When you find that, if you're willing and able, we'll stand together tonight. Hebrews chapter 11. So far, so good. I don't know about the volume, but the signal's holding. Hebrews chapter 11. Of course, the crux of the chapter really is in verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Then if you jump down to verse number 24, the last couple of weeks we spent in verse 23 about his parents. But in verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. And we'll stop there. We won't get to all of that tonight, but look at a few action words in this text. You doing good, Landon? You got them all handed out to the kids? There's probably extra. You can bring them down here if there's extra, buddy. And if you fill up yours, you can use the extra ones, okay? And keep the boy and the girls separated for a while and see if they do well. All right, let's pray and ask the Lord to help all of us. Lord, thank you for the day you've given us. Thank you for your book. That on in a world that is changing rapidly, we have a book that never has changed. On day to day, when our mood and our emotions and our mind and our flesh changes, ups and downs, goods and bad, that we have a book that's never changed. And we have great confidence in this word. And we thank you for giving us a Bible in our own tongue. Would you help us as we look to the scriptures once again to consider these examples of faith and to realize that they are there for our admonition, showing and proving that we too can live this life. A life of patience and faith is not some far off distant philosophy, but it is right at hand that we can live it as these men and women did. Men and women that were not perfect, some that struggled greatly. But overall, the testimony of their life was that by faith they did certain things and lived certain ways. Help us along those lines tonight, we'd ask in Christ's name, amen. All right, you may be seated. We're going to jump right in, for the most part, without much of an introduction, and give us the words. The introduction would be this, that I've said a couple times before, that a lot of times, not just in studying the Scripture, but as part of studying, but in reading the Scriptures, or preparing not just a sermon, but in day-to-day devotion, I'll scan a passage and look for key words. One of oftentimes the key word is like a repeated word or a repeated thought in the same text. Of course, in Hebrews 11, that would be by faith is the whole theme of the chapter. But I look for action words or words that can be put into a verb form, meaning what is being done in the passage. What is this person's faith doing? And I try to do that with these verses tonight and look at the action words that describe the faith of Moses to find out what is his faith saying, what is his faith doing. And when you look at verse number 24 down through verse number 28, you see words in one form or another like this: refusing, choosing, esteeming, respecting, forsaking, enduring, keeping. So if you just read the example of Moses' faith, it says in verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused. Verse 25, choosing rather to suffer. Verse 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ. The end of verse 26, for he had respect, or the word respecting I just used. Verse 27, by faith he forsook. There's a forsaking. The end of verse 27, for he endured. And then it's going to go on. In verse 28, through faith he kept, or there's a keeping. So I try to find action words or verbs that we can pull out and say, well, this is what faith looks like. This is kind of a guideline of what I should be doing or refraining from. Because as we have said months ago, what we say we believe and what we believe oftentimes are two different things. And I can't hear myself out of the thing, so I'm guessing this is dead. As far as other people are wondering why they can't hear that are here tonight. Let's see if this one works any better. Not that I need a PA, but for some, it's beneficial.
See if I can find a good volume.
Testing. I think we're back online. All right. That what we say we believe and what we believe are oftentimes two different things. Because faith has feet to it. That what I believe will move me to action. There might be good days and bad, ups and downs, high speed and low speed days. But what I believe moves me to action. Some of you are here tonight against feeling like you wanted to be here tonight because your faith moved you to be here. It happens. So I looked at some of these words and then I tried to take them and alliterate them or find the same letter or the same sound to begin the words with for memory's sake. And some are things that are not, that we are not to do. I'm going to split the infinitive there for English teachers. And some are things that we should do that we find in the faith of Moses. The first one we see is that his faith consents not. Or he refused to be called. Faith consents not. To consent is to agree. Is to be in one accord with. To refuse is to reject or to deny or to totally disown. Meaning Moses' faith refused to be called certain things. And it wasn't a back and forth. It was a clear statement of where he stood. In verse number 24, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. His faith consents not. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And Moses certainly could have said that this law and life that I am in, this wasn't my choice. I didn't ask to be given to Pharaoh's daughter. I didn't ask to be called a son of Pharaoh. So I might as well enjoy the life that has been handed to me because I certainly know the alternative was being cast into a river. The alternative now would be to be a slave. So I might as well enjoy being a son of Pharaoh. But his faith consented not. It refused to be called a son of Pharaoh. The natural tendency of humanity is to desire privilege and pleasure. It's natural to desire such things. And Moses was guaranteed a life filled with both. That if he just was silent and lived the life that had been placed upon him, he had lived, humanly speaking, a life of privilege and pleasure. But when he was grown, of course in the scriptures that was when he was 40 years of age, his heart was drawn in a distinctly different direction. Instead of pursuing what would be natural, this life of pleasure, this life of privilege, his heart was drawn to consent not, to refuse, not to agree with being called a son of Pharaoh. This all happened when he was grown, Ireland. Proverbs 22 uses that verse that we're familiar with, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. A lot of teaching around that, but the word train there comes from the Hebrew. And it literally describes in the context of the Old Testament the actions of the midwives. There's a story that goes with it that when they would help deliver a child, that they would dip their finger in the juices of a crushed date or some fruit like that, and they would reach into the mouth of a newborn infant and begin to massage the gums and the palate with that burst of flavor so it would motivate the baby to learn to nurse. The word train there literally means to create a thirst in. And Moses' parents, with very few years that they had, trained Moses. They created a thirst in Moses for God. They gave him a taste for the right path. They cultivated in him instantly and at a young age a personal appetite and desire for God's path. It's been said, and it's true, parents cannot pass on their faith to their children like they do other family traits. But what they can do is create an atmosphere of faith in their home. They can foster an appetite for God and be an example to their children with their actions and their attitudes that they're training their child. They have created a taste. They've created a thirst in that child to want the God that they see in their mom and dad. As an offspring of the palace, Moses had access to all the best that the world had to offer. And the scriptures are pretty clear, as is history, that he became proficient in all that was provided to him. Acts says Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. So he was thriving in that environment, physically speaking. History would say by the time he was 30, he personally had led the Egyptian army against the Ethiopians and had won a victory. We don't know other than the historical accounts, because it's not in the Bible. But he was living a life of pleasure and privilege. But when he was grown, his faith brought forth fruit, and he consented not. That consent means to be of one mind, to agree. And Moses' faith said, I can't consent to this. I refuse to be called the son of Pharaoh. Faith refuses to wear certain labels. Faith refuses to go along just to get along. Faith refuses to sin in order to have an easier road. Faith refuses to yield to temptation. Faith refuses to consent to evil. Proverbs, a wise man said, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Moses' faith consents not. He had a faith that could not and would not blend in with the world around him. Faith cannot stay in lockstep with the world system. Faith cannot agree or consent with the philosophies of this world. At some point, genuine Bible faith assimilation isn't acceptable anymore. And we've all heard it all of our lives, and Christians and lost people alike use this question, can't we just live and let live? Not as Christians, we can't. Faith stands out, faith speaks out, and faith steps out. Genuine Bible faith says, I cannot consent to this. I refuse to be in agreement with this. Live and let live is not in the book for a Christian. Being light and salt is in the book for a Christian. Exposing and arresting decay. So number one, faith consents not. Refuses to have agreement with certain philosophies and people. Number two, not only does faith consent not in verse 24, but in verse 25, faith chooses. And in this context, faith chooses suffering. Verse 24, he consents not. He refuses to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer the affliction with the people of God. And it's just a Bible study more or less tonight, but choosing implies a deliberate resolution. This was not a hasty, impulsive whim for Moses. He deliberately had a resolution, knowing what the result was going to be. That I cannot consent to certain things. By default, then I am choosing suffering. Moses easily, perhaps, could have chosen not to suffer. To just blend in and let the suffering pass him by. Because this is the thing about faith's choices. Nobody can choose for you. And no one can force you to choose. All his parents could do was to train up to create a thirst in him. And the thirst they created in him lasted long beyond the toddler years to when he was 40 years old. His faith could not consent to certain things, but it chose suffering. A choice nobody can make for him or keep him from making. His faith made for itself. It chose suffering. He chose to suffer, and the text says, with the people of God. I think it's going to come down to this day again in our lifetime, perhaps. That Moses' faith refused to live a life of ease while his brethren lived in chains. Typed it up this way. He refused to be found sipping on cold drinks while his brethren were dying of thirst. He refused the eating till his belly was full while theirs were swollen. He refused the safety and the security of the palace while his brethren slaved away. Faith wouldn't let him sit this one out. His faith, like Paul said, I choose to identify with the people of God. And it is upon us again. It is time for us to take a stand with God's people, even if it puts us at odds with the government, with friends, with family. Think of the story Tortured for Christ, or the pastor's wife. One book by Richard Wurmbrand, one by Sabrina Wurmbrand, his wife. When Stalin and the communists marched into Romania and started arresting and torturing
believers that would not pledge allegiance to communism. They arrested them as political prisoners for crimes against the state. And while they were in their original holding cells, many of them, in the police station, before they had been sent off to the POW camps and to the torture chambers, they'd be sitting in their cells and the guards would be discussing what was going to happen, and there'd be knocks at the door of the police station. The police would open the door. In one particular case, it was a young, teenage, barely adult girl standing there. And she said, "I heard you are rounding up and arresting Christians that won't comply with these orders. Then you need to arrest me too, because you missed me in the sweep." I'm not saying I'd do it. I'm saying Moses did it. His faith consented not, and his faith chose, "I will not live a life of ease while my brethren live a life of slavery." The songwriter said, "Am I a soldier of the cross, a follower of the Lamb? And shall I fear to own his cause or blush to speak his name? In the name, the precious name of him who died for me, through grace I'll win the promised crown, whatever my cross may be. Must I be carried to the skies on flowery beds of ease, while others fought to win the prize and sailed through bloody seas? Are there no foes for me to face? Must I not stem the flood? Is this vile world a friend to grace to help me on to God? Since I must fight if I would reign, increase my courage, Lord. I'll bear the toil, endure the pain, supported by thy word." Moses willingly made a choice. I'm going to suffer with the people of God. And it's a choice he had to make for himself. No one could make it, no one could stop him. Pharaoh couldn't stop him, his parents couldn't choose for him. He became of an age where his faith said, "I consent not. I refuse to identify with that." And his faith said, "I choose this. I will suffer with the people of God if suffering is to be the lot of the people of God." Nobody could make the choice. Nobody could stop the choice. I say it for our young people and for us as well. Taking up your cross is a choice. Denying yourself is a choice. Following Christ is a choice. Identifying, Paul said, with the sufferings of Jesus Christ is a choice. Being made conformable unto his death is a choice. Faith chooses, even if suffering is involved. So number one, faith consents not. Number two, faith chooses. Number three, we see faith calculates. It adds it up. It counts the cost of the choice. In verse 24, "Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt." He esteems the reproach of Christ. He's calculating. He's counting the cost. Again, the scripture said he has come of age. This is not an immature, impulsive decision. He is esteeming. It means he's calculating. To esteem means to value or to estimate something. To value it highly, to prize something. He's putting an estimate. I estimate this is worth this much, and I estimate this item is worth this much. And when I esteem or I estimate the two, when I've calculated it up, I esteem the reproach of Christ as far greater value than the pleasures of sin. You could say it this way. He came to a fork in the road of his life, and he has to look both ways. The pleasures of sin, being the son of Pharaoh, or the sufferings of God's people and the reproach of Christ. And he calculates which way is best. The reproach of Christ is in one balance, meaning the worst that Christianity has to offer. The high price of being a disciple of Jesus Christ. The reproach of Christ, the worst of Christianity on one side of the balance, and the treasures of Egypt, the best the world has to offer. Moses' faith calculates, and he calculated, he esteemed, he estimated that the worst thing that Christianity has to offer is of far greater value than the best thing this world has to offer. He weighed all the world was giving him and would give him against what God had promised and made a choice. Again, like we started out a few moments ago, I would surmise part of him considering and esteeming, weighing it out, that God was worth the cost is the taste his parents gave him of God. He didn't learn that God was a God worthy of being trusted by the world's teaching. He didn't learn that Jehovah is God alone by the religious leaders of Egypt. But his parents had trained him at a young age. They had created a thirst in him. They had given him a taste that our God is so much better than their gods, Moses. That our God is worthy of you giving up everything, Moses. The day is going to come that you're going to have to choose. And when you weigh it out, remember the thirst and the taste we gave you for God.
If you go over to Luke chapter 14, we've looked at this a couple of times in the last year or so. Thought it would be fitting to read it again. Luke chapter 14. We see faith consents not. He wasn't going to agree. Faith chooses to suffer. But it's a calculated choice. Faith calculates. It counts up the cost. It's not just empty words. Luke 14 down to verse, I guess we can start in verse number 16. Said, then said he unto them, a certain man made a great supper and bade many. And he sent his servant at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. So he's laying out before all of his people a choice. Here's this great supper that's ready for you. They all with one consent. So walking in agreement with each other without even knowing that they were agreeing with each other. They all with one consent. What were they in agreement about? Making excuses on why they couldn't show up. They all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I go to prove them. I pray thee have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife and therefore I cannot come. So that servant came and shewed his lord these things. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant. And I know there's some that would say, they had legitimate reasons why they couldn't choose and make that calculated choice to come to the master. God didn't understand it. He was angry about it. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city and bring in hither the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. And the servant said, Lord, it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is room. And the Lord said unto the servant, go out into the highways and the hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say unto you that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. And there went great multitudes with him. And he turned and said unto them, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, in his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you intending to build a tower sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he hath sufficient to finish it? Lest haply after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going to make war against another king sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor yet for the dunghill, but men cast it out. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. Moses' faith made a calculated choice. That I esteem, Hebrews chapter 11 says, the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. He was very familiar with the treasure house of Egypt. He knew what the stockpile and the storehouses contained in Egypt and how mighty of a financial powerhouse Egypt would have been at that time. And Moses' faith said, I've made a calculated choice. I esteem. I consider, I estimate that the reproaches of Jesus Christ has far greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. His faith made a calculated choice that any cost was worth paying to stand with God, to suffer with God's people. This isn't necessarily a timely statement because half the church is out being sick. But in today's church, most skip out on church or whatever else God would have them to be doing for family, friends, fun, or functions. If I live a Christian life that skips out on the things of God for family, friends, fun, or functions, there's no chance I stay hanging in there when persecution comes. Moses is making a calculated choice. What's worth it and what is it not worth? Most of us decide based on what other people are going to think, say, or do. It's just not worth upsetting anybody. It'd be a bad testimony if I had to turn them down. It won't be very Christ-like to forsake certain people. Let's be honest. What that is a synonym for is I counted the cost of being faithful to Christ. Of being in my Bible, of being in prayer, of being a witness, of attending the services, including prayer meeting, of being a separated Christian, of tithing, of deciding to be with God's people instead of the world. And I've just considered, I've estimated Christ is just not worth that to me. He said, God understands. No, he doesn't. The master's angry when we choose to put other things and calculate that other things are worth more than he. So I would submit for our thinking anyway, that choosing and esteeming are directly linked. The choosing and the calculating are directly linked by faith. Calculating what it might cost and being willing to pay any cost to know and follow Christ. So again, Moses weighed it out. And he decided that God was going to be his choice. And it ties it in with point number four. There's 6 points, and we're going to stop on point number four because we're about out of time. His faith consented not. His faith chose. His faith calculated. A part of that calculation is point number four, which is in verse 25 and 26. Faith considers. And point number three, when faith calculates, here's what the factors are to be summed up. Faith considers in verse 25 and 26. Ireland and Addie, real pay attention to your sisters too. Choosing rather, here's the choice, to suffer affliction with the people of God, here's a consideration, than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Esteeming, there's the calculation, the reproach of Christ, greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Here's the consideration. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. His faith chose and his faith calculated because his faith considered. It had respect to the reward. It considered the length of the seasons. We have seasons around here that vary in length. It seems like winter is still continuing on as we got little snow sprinkles today and it's going to freeze tonight. So we'd like to see spring and summer start to be longer than winter. It's never going to happen in Maine anyway. Faith calculates because faith considers the length of seasons. In Moses, it says his faith had respect to the ultimate reward, that he gave up the temporary to gain the eternal. Jim Elliot, I'm doing some reading on him. A famous missionary now that he's dead. Nobody knew him when he was alive except for those that were directly involved in his ministry. And I read some interesting things about why he was such a daredevil and why he even went to reach a tribe that people told him not to go to. And it almost would seem by his last few pages of his journal that he carried such a darkness with him, he was chasing death. And it cost him his life at a very young age. But I'm still reading his journal and it's fascinating. The great struggles that Jim Elliot had with a particular sin that I won't go into tonight. And thought he couldn't conquer, so he just threw himself at the ministry, oftentimes at great risk, and it ended up costing him his life. But he said, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. So faith considers the length of the season and the richness of the reward. Say it this way, just practically speaking, Moses lived 120 years. He could have lived that 120 years high on the hog. But out of 120 years, he spends 80 of it suffering reproach. He said, man, what a wasted life. 40 years in the best privilege and pleasure the world had to offer. 80 years suffering reproach. That doesn't balance out. And it doesn't, but not in the way the world thinks. 120 years he had to live. 80 of it suffering reproach. But since then, it's been 4,000 years enjoying the reward.
He gave up the temporal to gain the eternal. His faith was not just considering the day in which he was in, that 24-hour period, the choices right before him. He was considering the lengths of the season, and his faith understood, it had seen played out time and time again, I am sure, in Egypt, that the season of pleasure and sin quickly comes to an end. And it would be foolish tonight to try to deny that there is pleasure in sin. When you try to convince yourself, oh, there's no pleasure in that. Sure there is. But the pleasure is short-lived. And we enjoy, and many of us did when you were lost away from God. We enjoyed planting seeds of selfishness and seeds of sensuality. Not just physical relationships, but living by the senses, that whatever you had an appetite for, that's what you chased. We enjoyed planting those seeds, but how miserable we were when the harvest came in. How soon the glow of even the most exciting experience fades. And there's varying opinions out there about those that are battling alcohol or drug use in the state of Maine. It's an epidemic all over the country. I do security at one of the clinics in Maine that treats drug addictions. Read this the other day in one of the trainings about addiction, and specifically opioids and hard drugs. The addicts that have been at it a long time, oftentimes, most times, they're not drugging anymore to feel good. They're not taking drugs anymore trying to find a high. They're simply taking it to avoid feeling bad. Their body has drugged so long, if they don't, it is miserable illness and sickness in their body. They say, oh, they just want to get high and live happy and get the euphoria. That's long gone for a lifelong addict. That's the reason why they have to keep chasing higher and higher highs. It's the same thing with psychotropic medications for mental illness. One's not enough, so you've got to up the dose and add another and add another. You're always chasing to numb what is there. They are now doping and drugging most addicts because they're trying to stave off the feeling of bad. The illusion is long gone, but they're hooked because they didn't consider the length of the seasons. James 1 says, every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust. If we could have spiritual counseling for those that are battling addiction, it would help them more than a doctor ever could. Because personal responsibility is part of it. Is you're where you are because you followed your own appetite. Stop blaming your mom and dad, and you stop blaming your preacher. Stop blaming everybody else. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, that conception, what does it bring forth in birth? It bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Moses' faith consented not. It chose to suffer. It calculated the cost. It considered the length of the seasons. It is natural to pursue privilege and pleasure and enticement and appetites. It is supernatural. It is of God to consider the length of the seasons. A prudent man considers the destination before ever beginning the journey. Proverbs 14, the wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of fools is deceit. Proverbs 14, 15, the simple believeth every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his going. Proverbs 22, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Deuteronomy 32, they are a nation void of counsel. Neither is there any understanding in them. Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end. Can I tell you tonight, child, teen, or adult alike, if you are considering following the lusts and the enticements and the appetites, and you say, well, this person did it, or that church did it, or that Christian did it, and man, everything's turned out fine, and they're happier than they've ever been, and they're freer than there ever been. Would you stop and live by faith and consider the length of the season? The harvest is going to come due. Be prudent now. Live by faith now and consider. Yes, there's pleasure there. There's temporary happiness there. But when the harvest comes due, it is a miserable place to be. D.L. Moody said, I'd rather beg for bread on earth like Lazarus than to beg for water in hell like the rich man. Psalm 84 said, for a day in thy courts is better than 1,000. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. You adults, but teenagers, really young adults, children, you don't take just your preacher's word for it, your parents' word for it. Go scrutinize this book. Look at the examples. You say, I don't trust mom and dad's word. I don't like your word. You're just a mean, cranky preacher. I know. Go look at the examples in Hebrews chapter 11. Moses said, faith consents not. I can't agree to everything. I can't run with everybody. I can't wear every label. Faith chooses to be with the people of God, even if that means suffering. Faith calculates.
What is this going to cost me? Because no price is too high for Jesus Christ. Because it considers the recompense of the reward and the length of the season. That long after this seed is planted, I'm going to have to eat the fruit of it. And I'd like to be eating the fruit of righteousness and peace and joy for a long time. Moses' faith considered the length of the season. And again, those are choices nobody can make for you, and nobody can stop you from making. Ultimately, any one of us, you get to a certain age or a certain mentality, you're going to do whatever it is you want to do. But his parents began to train him up. They gave him a taste for it. And the God they gave him a taste for is the God when he came of an age where he had to make choices. He said, that God, the worst that Christianity will ever hand me is of far greater riches than the best that this world can ever offer. Because long after the euphoria wears off, the remorse and the shame and the guilt usually don't go away. Even for Christians, sometimes we know it's under the blood, it's forgiven, it's dealt with, and still we battle shame and regret and crippling effects of sin from long ago. So instead of pointing out this person or that person or this person as exceptions to the rule, look at the rule. What you sow is what you're going to reap. And say, I want to be a person of faith. Not my pastor's faith, not my parents' faith, not my peers' faith, or any variation or version of their faith. I want to taste and see that the Lord is good for myself. And I want to wear the right labels as a Christian. I'm going to consent not. I'm going to refuse to go with the world system. I'm going to make some choices that I stand with God's and God's people. I'm going to stand with this book no matter what else it costs me. And it's going to be not impulsive, but it's going to be a calculated. I've sat down, I've looked at it, I've considered it, I've seen what both sides have to offer, and say I stand with God. Because I've considered. Let's stop there for tonight. I'd like to get the last two, but I won't for 40 minutes in. But if you want them for consideration for next week, faith compromises not. He forsook Egypt. He wasn't going to have no alliance with Egypt at all. He completely renounced it and forsook Egypt. And faith continues. We find him enduring and keeping. But we'll stop there.